My name is Kathleen Young. I'm 55 years of age. Today's date is September 9th, 2018. I'm in Los Angeles, California at the Annenberg Photography Museum, and I'm here being interviewed by my very dear friend, Diana.
Hi, Kathleen. This is Diana, and we're going to get started with some questions for you. Are you ready?
Yes.
I know you're an avid photographer. How do you use photographs to tell stories?
I find the camera to be able to capture a moment in time. So I look through life like a lens, and so I try to capture moments in time in the human condition is what I really try to do. I'm not a photographer, but that's what I like to do.
I've seen some of those photographs. You have an amazing ability to capture those moments in time. If you could photograph any place in America, where would it be?
You know, I think at this stage of my life, it changes all the time. I would like to do all 50 states, meaning travel there and see each state. I guess right now, because my parents are 78 and 81, I'd like to spend more time in Michigan, historically looking at parts of the Midwest where I had my, you know, impressionable first 24 years of my life before I moved to the West Coast.
Are you inspired to shoot pictures in that area?
I think I'm inspired, but I think I'm also, it's a timeline, it's a historical timeline for me. And as my parents get older and I get older, it's just a wonderful way to document it.
What's your favorite photograph that you've taken and why?
Well, I'm just a novice photographer, unlike you, who's my mentor. I think I don't have a favorite photograph. I think it's whenever I can capture any part of the human condition in a natural setting. When I catch something and it's in a raw form, that's my favorite photograph.
Can you tell me a little bit about your childhood? What were you like as a child?
Well, this interview is very emotional because you're a very dear friend of mine, so I'm going to try not to cry. So I was born in Fremont, Michigan. It's very emotional. I was born in Fremont, Michigan in 1962 in the Gerber baby capital of the world. Fremont, Michigan is a Gerber baby capital, and so that's how I was recognized as a baby.
What made it the Gerber capital of the world?
It was where the corporation was founded.
I see.
Yeah. So I'm a Gerber baby.
It's very funny.
Yeah. So.
It's good they have Kleenex here.
My childhood was in the Midwest, and my favorite story about my childhood was that my parents had one car in a very small farming community of 1,500 people. And because I only had one car, I really wanted to take tennis lessons. And this really was what I feel has carried me through my entire life of being tenacious. So my dad said, you can't take tennis lessons when I have one car and I have to go to work. And my mother was a stay-at-home domestic engineer, as I like to call it.
That's a great title.
And so I said, no problem. I'm going to ride my bike. And then back then, it was, you know, it was cornfields, and it was really safe. So I rode my bike 12 miles, took a couple hours of tennis lessons, went over to my grandmother's house, my mother's mother, and then I rode my bike back home. And I work in a university setting, and I tell young people that that was a really impressionable time of teaching me, or I started to create a real tenacious spirit. And that's one of my favorite stories to tell people. What I'm really the proudest of, I have 4 advanced degrees, but what I'm really the most proud of is that I was very tenacious and finding ways to navigate and maneuver through life to get what I wanted and needed. And that was one thing I'm really proud of.
Nice. Were you able to take that experience into adulthood, being tenacious?
Yeah, very much so. It's the bedrock of who I am today.
Nice. Can you tell me about one of the most difficult moments in your life? Could be at any age. Could be today.
A difficult moment in my life. I think a difficult moment in my life is self-acceptance. And because I was so tenacious, to dovetail a little bit, being so tenacious, I am a workaholic, and I made some terrible mistakes about a year ago. And part of the reason I made those mistakes is because I don't know how to ask for help, and I don't know how to have balance in my life. And so what I've really learned from that process is the gift of surrendering and letting go and acceptance.
Nice. Can you tell me about one or two people who have been the biggest influences on your life?
So I'm 55, which this year is a cornerstone for me for some, or mild stone for me for some reason, but I'd say my mother and father. My father's 81 and my mother is 78. They're tremendous, influential people. I also have to say, because I'm a political junkie, but Hillary Clinton, who I've been a staunch advocate of my entire life, well, since 1992, is just a tremendous influence in my life, watching how she maneuvered through life, both personally and professionally, and for our country.
Mm. Yeah. What advice would you give to your teenage self?
The same advice that I give young people. I work in a university setting, and to try to live each moment, be in the present, and be gentle with yourself as you journey through life.
Are there any positive moments or memories from your life that you think shaped who you are today? Or negative events or memories that you think shaped who you are today?
I think the Midwestern, I'm from the Midwest, as I shared, and I think coming from the Midwest, it is the real foundation and roots of who I am and really proud of it. I wasn't proud of it when I moved to San Francisco and the late 80s for my first job, but I've grown into an acceptance, and I'm really proud of that foundation of, to me, rock solid people and the realness of kindness and being loving. I really learned and experienced that growing up in the Midwest.
Can you tell me about some of the most important lessons you've learned in life?
That life is a journey, and to try to enjoy the moment, because that's all you really have. And I don't. I'm always thinking ahead and strategizing ahead. But I would say self-acceptance, and to be more compassionate and less judgmental. I'm trying so hard to be more of that and less of that. and to be present.
What are you proudest of, personally and professionally, in your life?
I'm proudest of, in order to buy the house that I'm currently in, I lived in 25 square feet for 3 years to save enough to purchase a home. And I remember I had my PhD at the time, I was on a tenure track at the time, and I was living in a wealthy, wealthy area of Los Angeles. And I remember complaining to my mother daily that I worked this hard to get here and that I'm living in this 25 square feet. And she said, be grateful. There are people without running water. You have a roof over your head. It's a short term for a long term gain. And I finally got my house, which was 1,450 square feet, four bedroom. And I just remember someone either said it or there was a quote. I think it's from Gandhi, I think, but it's something of, and it's my mantra because of living there and having this quote thing at the same time, which is, live simply so that others may simply live. And living in that 25 square feet has truly been my mantra in every aspect of my life.
Nice. What about professionally? What are you proudest of professionally?
That I've done very, very good work to make the human condition better for people every day.
That is so sweet. Yeah. Very profound. What are you most grateful for?
I'm most grateful for my health. I've had cancer twice at 25 and 47, and I'm extraordinarily grateful for my health and this country that I love. It's under a lot of turmoil right now politically with the Trump administration, and I've fallen much more deeply in love with this country in spite of what's happening in the current political climate.
Track here. Hang on just a second.
Sure.
What are you most grateful for?
My health. And as I shared, the country that we live in.
Good. How would you like to be remembered?
I'd like to be remembered by a quote that I have in a bathroom of mine, which is, did I love enough? Was I present enough? And did I tell people that I love them?
Do you have any regrets?
Oh, just a couple. I have a regret. But I try to turn my regrets into ways of lessons. You know, life, I'm a professor and a researcher, and I try to take the lessons and create positive outcomes from those lessons. But I have, my biggest regret is to not let go and surrender and be present in the moment.
Nice. Is there anything you want to ask me that you have never asked me before? I'm surprised to see that question.
Sorry about that.
Did you pick that?
I did. You get to
that's great.
Tailor your questions. So, I guess the question I would ask you is, you know, where are you at the stage of your life? And I don't even think that. I think I just brought you into this room. We're at the Annenberg Museum, and I just threw you in here to ask these questions. And I just wanted to know what that experience was like. You were gracious enough to interview me, which it was just, to me, so moving, because we've been in different points in our life. We've only known each other a short time, but there have been very poignant and meaningful moments that I've shared with you, and this is one of them. So I just want to know what that was like for you to do this.
That's interesting you say that, because I was thinking the same thing earlier in the conversation or the interview, that when we take a moment and this booth lets you do that, this, as you said, and people can't see it, but it's a small booth, small table, two microphones. We're sitting across from each other. We each have headphones on. And with this iPad in front of us that has the suggested questions. And what happens is really interesting. It's really because as a studio musician and a songwriter, I'm used to being in front of a microphone and with headsets on, and it has a way of focusing you. Mm. You know, it has a way of I mean, there's window, little porthole windows and in a little cubicle here. So, you know, we could see out, but the being in front of a mic and on headphones has a way of clearing your mind and focusing on the immediacy of the moment, yeah, of the question, of what's in your heart right now. So it's really neat to be sharing this with you. Yeah, this is really...
I think
it's almost like I would want to say, how can we bring this into our lives, right? Yeah. How can we have this kind of really focused sharing with other people in our lives? Like, what do we have to take around a little booth? Or what do we, you know, how do we do that? Because people are so distracted today and so, they're so diverse in all the things that they do, you know, to be able to just keep it all outside this tiny little booth. This, what is this booth? You know, like 3 foot by 8 foot or something. So that's about the size you spent a lot of time in, right?
Yeah,
so.
It reminds me, that's half of the 25 square feet.
But yeah.
I think for me, it's very telling that you interviewed me with your professional background doing this type of work. I've always wanted you to interview me, which I never told you
this. I did not know this. Okay.
So when I came in here and I saw StoryCorps, I just started to cry. I thought, it's the universe that's supposed to happen.
Yeah.
And then you accepted, so I was very, very, very moved. And I think that's why I started to cry at the beginning, because the universe has a way of just creating this divine order of, it just creates this moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so, you know, the world is crazy out there. It's 97 degrees here in Los Angeles, and there's traffic. And we got here, and we're in this little tiny booth, and I've just shared my, I call this my journey. I've just shared my life's journey with you, and I'm just deeply grateful.
Nice. It's interesting, isn't it, how when we bring those walls in around us, that somehow we can go deep, you know? Seems without it, there's so much, like you said, so many that it's more shallow, but this allows us to get deeper and hear. And these are really, it's really interesting to hear you talk about some of these things. So, if you knew this was going to be our last conversation, is there anything you've never told me that you might want to share with me now?
Yes. I was actually thinking a couple of things this morning before we got together to go to a photography museum. It appears that we come from similar childhood backgrounds. And I'm just so overcome with awe what you've done with your life, coming from a rural community. You, without going into any part of your life, but you lived in Manhattan and what you did professionally with your life. And sometimes I just want to stop and acknowledge people and say, look what you've done. Look what you came from and look what you've done. Look what you've created, how you've contributed to humanity. And I just think it's noteworthy, and I'm really in awe of what you've done with your life.
Thank you. And back at you, too, because I know it hasn't always been easy. Thinking about your family many generations from now, and knowing that they may hear this recording, is there anything you want to say to them? Any wisdom or advice you would like to share?
What was the first part of the question?
Sort of projecting about your family generations from now, and knowing that they may hear this recording. So let's open that up, since I know you don't have children.
Yeah.
So you're not going to have grandchildren.
No.
So unless you have an extended family, which you do, and which we all do. And I think that's the way we need to think, is, okay, so maybe, and your teacher. And you just told me, you know, yesterday about some of the ways in which you were impacting your students who themselves are teachers going back into the classroom, and some of the tiniest things that you were telling them is a trickle down. It's as though you have just touched two generations before you, or you know, or three generations before you. So, what would you say to them, to those people, that those younger students that your students are impacting? You do have grandchildren. What am I saying? It's because. Yeah. People that were in your class yesterday, right? And you were telling them some just very simple but really profound things to share with their students. Maybe you could, you know,
well,
touch on that.
When you're talking, I had a hysterectomy about, I think, approximately 10 years ago for post-cancer preventative measures. And it's very interesting because it was very hard for me to sign that consent form that said, you realize you'll never, and I was 47 or 48, so it wasn't like I was going to have children, but I have a new relationship, and my partner has two sons, and they will have children, so there is a potential of me being a grandmother, which has been, I never say never, I never dreamed that would, those types of opportunities would cross my journey or my path ever in my life. So that's been very shocking and joyful and scary for me all in the same breath. But I don't know what I don't know where I come from in Germany. I come from a town, I won't say my last name, but I'm from an area of Germany. And
your family is?
My father's side, yeah.
Uh-huh. Where in Germany?
I don't know, and my father was researching it for decades when I wasn't available, I was busy, I wasn't interested, and now I'm very interested and would like to go back with him to find the origin of our roots on my father's side. So I'm the only one in my family on my mother or father's side that has a PhD, and so I felt a tremendous responsibility having that role in my family. And so I want to say especially to all members of my family and futuristically that I really hope they go forth and they pursue higher education on many different levels and break the mold. I was very very egotistical at one point in my life, saying nobody will come close to this, and that to me now is a heartbreak because I want someone to surpass me in many, many ways.
It's a very parental desire, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's nice. Tell me about where you grew up and what your childhood was like. You've told us where you were from and a small town and some of what that meant to you. Is there anything else that you would add to that?
No, I was just from, I'm proud to say this, but I was from a very small town in Michigan and was a Gerber baby.
Gerby? Is that their nickname?
Yeah. That's about enough. Yeah.
Did you have a nickname? I think you did.
Yeah, I did.
What was it?
So my nickname is Kelly with an I. And if you're Irish...
K-E-L-L-I?
K-E-L-L-I. If you're Irish, people understand. Because there's K-E-L-L-E-Y and K-E-L-L-Y, but I'm K-E-L-L-I, which really comes from a nickname. I want to be protective of my... Nobody knows I'm doing this interview today, but my father... It was kind of a break off from my father's nickname, and he had a nickname, Callie. And so Kelly came from Cali, which has nothing to do with my real first name.
Did your parents call you that?
Yeah.
Growing up?
Yeah.
So did your mom still call you that?
Yeah.
Oh,
so
really?
I'm Kelly until I took my position in Los Angeles, and a former partner at the time said, legally, we really need you to change your name to your real name, which is Kathleen. Mm-hmm. And I was ready. And so, but what's hilarious, and it's a true story, is that I'm Kathleen here in Los Angeles, just in Southern California, but I'm Kelly everywhere else in the United States.
That's great.
So, yeah, but I like my real name.
But when you introduce yourself today, you introduce yourself as?
Kathleen.
Yeah.
Great.
Tell me about your siblings, and were you close with them?
So I'm the oldest of three, and I'm a very proud Sagittarius.
I can vouch for that. Very, very proud Sagittarius.
Well, you know why? Because I lived in China for 6 months in 2015, and my experience living in Hangzhou, China, was how the Chinese people view and live astrology, and especially from a Buddhist perspective. So it very much left a current impression on my life. And so, I'm the oldest of three, and then I have a sister, and then I have a brother, and there's 3 years between my sister and 6 years between my brother. And we were nice. Very close growing up, yes.
Great. If you could go back and relive your teenage years, would you? And why or why not?
Parts of it, yes. And parts of it, no. But, I think I can't say that without being honest with myself, that everything to this point in my life were growing pains and building blocks, and I can't imagine who I am without them now. Mm-hmm. Especially the very, very painful, difficult parts of it, for sure.
Yeah. Do you remember your first kiss?
Yes, I do.
And who was it with? And where did it happen?
I don't
remember. You can use first names.
I don't remember putting this question in.
It's right there.
So I kissed a boy, but I wasn't interested in a boy. I wasn't interested.
Did you know then?
I did not know then, so I withdrew. Mm-hmm. And it's taking me my entire life to get to this point to be able to even not only feel comfortable and safe, but really at peace and joyful to share that I later in life realized that I really enjoyed kissing girls and currently kiss just one.
Oh, what are the most important lessons you've learned from your partner? That might be the one that you kiss. Just one that you are kissing.
It is the one and only that I will ever kiss. I think what I've learned, because she has children, and I want to be careful if this is ever published, but I've learned a lot of things. I go through life, if you were to use an analogy of a river, because I'm really drawn to water, but in the river of life, my partner, who is a deeply beloved person in my life, is able to flow and go with the flow of the water as I smash into the rocks of life. And so I think that would be one of the most important things. No matter what, I always said that when two people come together, what really shows the strength and the possibility of a long-term relationship is when you have the change of seasons of life, but that you have these pinnacle moments of life and death. Unfortunately, 9/11, the 17th anniversary will be 2 days from now, and she actually lived in that area and survived it, truly survived it. So for me, in a long-term relationship, it's can you go through those moments and still hold each other's hand and come out the other side? And my partner not only has done that, but has done that with grace and beauty.
You may have just identified this, but what are the keys to a strong relationship?
Communication. Absolutely, communication. Humor. It doesn't hurt. You're a musician. It doesn't hurt when one member, I'm not that, but when one member can play an instrument and or sing, I think is critical to a relationship.
That is so interesting.
I had to score points for that one.
Well, I've never, ever heard anybody attribute a musical skill or talent to benefiting a relationship. I'd like to hear a little bit more about how you see that. I've never heard anybody acknowledge that or observe that.
Really?
Yeah.
So I watched.
I think there's some truth, but let's explore it a little bit because I'm curious how you see it.
So you know we watch movies together, and we have different genres that we enjoy, and
this
I love
is true.
Documentaries, and so I watched a documentary. 15, 20 years ago, about 5 or 6 couples that had been together 50 years or longer, and they interviewed them all over the United States, and they asked what were the common threads that kept a marriage intact.
Uh-huh.
And every single one of them said an instrument and or singing, and it never left me. And then they showed them singing or playing an instrument with each other, and it never left me. And
wow.
So I picked my current partner and long-term love for life, not only sings, but can play both, plays an instrument, sings, and loves to sing to me and to others. And you, she will harmonize with you.
Yes, I enjoy that, yeah. That is so interesting, yeah. I know the times that I've been with people that in relationship where we've been able to pick up the guitar and sing or harmonize, added something. Definitely added something to the relationship.
I think what happens with music is it's universal, and it sheds all of the layers of fear, and people are able to be safe and comfortable, and it sheds so that the vulnerabilities of people will come out through a very joyful sound that brings people together. And music does that, at least it does for me.
All right, this could be very timely. Who was the love of your life? Or I might have to change that. Who is the love of your life?
My current and only partner. But the only one that I'll
you
ever
keep adding and adding and only.
Well, she's the only
as though
one.
You used to have them lined up or something. Well, there's this one, but on the side.
No, that's another interview at another time. No.
So I'm surprised to see this question come up, but since you chose it, describe your illness.
So there's only a couple more questions left. Yeah. But so I had cancer.
Well, that's the questions you chose. I've been thinking of some myself, you know.
So I had cancer when I was 25. I had Hodgkin's on the left side of my body, stage 2. And then I was diagnosed with breast cancer on the same side at the age of 47. I was just shy of 20 years being cancer-free from Hodgkin's. And so it's just amazing to me what I was thinking then at 25 versus when I was diagnosed a second time with cancer and how I handled it, how I absorbed it, how I navigated through it. And so, and externally, these were lessons and these were wake-up calls to, as the beginning of the interview talks about, being in the moment, letting go, surrendering and being fully available to people in your environment that you're in. Because all you really have is this moment. And by the way, that was just gone.
Right. You know. Being gone. Yeah.
So I just want to say one thing, though, because of this question. So we have a mutual friend who also has an extraordinary anniversary date. And I don't want to give out her information in any way. But between the two of us, there will be 50 years of being cancer-free.
That's extraordinary.
Between two women.
Yeah, that's extraordinary.
And as a Sagittarius, we're going to have an enormous party, and we're hoping that you will play at our...
Oh, of course, of course.
Yeah. You will play at our party in the spring.
I would be happy to.
Yeah.
What was your life like before your diagnosis? How did this change? What happened after? Do you feel in yourself that there is a before and an after, Kathleen, in terms of this life experience?
Well, you know, I've shared some of my story. I have a before and after from a childhood trauma that's very, has left an enormous, I think often, what would I have been like if that had not happened, but it did, and... But with cancer, it's just a wake-up call. And the second time, the memo came in bold letters and just said, you're enough.
Oh, wow.
You're enough.
Yeah.
And you don't have to keep pushing and driving and another degree and another research project across the globe. And I'm still trying to get that.
Okay. Billboard to self, right?
Billboard to self, yeah.
That's good.
So.
I think you did that. Yeah. Can you tell me about someone who has been particularly kind to you since your diagnosis?
Yes. Many people. I wouldn't have made it without them. But I had my... First of all, I never had anything happen to me until I was 25. I didn't have a broken bone. I didn't have my tonsils out. I didn't have my wisdom teeth taken out. So when I had Hodgkin's the first time, it was a real trauma to my body because I'd never had anything happen to me medically. The flu occasionally or a cold. And so they had to do a surgery to remove my spleen, and they had to move my ovaries and build metal blocks to protect my heart from radiation and da 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 da. And I had a sponge bath by a Filipino woman outside of San Francisco in Burlingame, California. And I looked at her, and I was really groggy and in a lot of pain and kind of just traumatized from the whole thing. And I said, what are you going to do? And she said, I have to clean you. And I said, what? And I was a PE teacher, at the time, so I was really into hygiene. I was a health teacher. And I said, no, I'll do this myself. And it was really about surrendering to somebody else. And she did an amazing job. And I cried because I...
You let go.
I let go, and I was really vulnerable in front of somebody with the simplest thing.
Act of kindness.
Yeah. So.
So I have, that's the end of your questions, but I have three questions.
Surprise.
That I thought I might just throw in here.
Okay.
Are you up for it to finish this out? Okay, the first thing is you mentioned something global a while ago, and I happen to know you just came back from Africa recently, where you did something. I wonder if there's something that you brought back with you from that experience that you might want to share.
Mm. So because I've had cancer twice, it really shaped my professional career. I went back and got several degrees, 3 degrees in public health. And the work that I do is to provide breast cancer services for low-income uninsured women, both here in Los Angeles and around now in the last 5 years, parts of the world, developing regions of the world. So we put together a training. I was just the project manager. I'm just the academic researcher aspect of it. But we put together a training program for physicians and allied health professionals, medical students, nursing students, healthcare workers in Gaborone, Botswana, which is the capital of Botswana. And what I took from that experience was the dedication and commitment that people have in healthcare. It gave me hope as we struggle in healthcare in this country. It gave me the hope that care is there, and I hope that it will be more emphasized here in this country. And that no matter where I go, there is a mutual commitment to healthcare and taking care of people. And to find the best practice between the countries or regions or policies around the globe. And that was something I took from. They're doing amazing things in Bokomoso Hospital in Gaborone, Botswana. I am extraordinarily humbled and was overwhelmed with the extraordinary work that those people are currently doing at this hospital.
I love that thought, that we can learn so much by sharing knowledge across the globe, and that really is where we are on so many levels. So thank you. Yeah. Thank you for the work that you did there. Well, my second question is, would you rather read a book or see a movie, and
so,
why?
So this is loaded by Diana, because we're not only in a
tick
book tock, club.
Time is ticking. You got to answer the question.
Diana and I are in a book club, and I hope the head of the book club hears this. And we're also in a movie club and a photography club together.
All the bases.
Extraordinarily loaded. I have to, you know the answer to that already, but I have done enormous reading for work for 30 years, and so that is not my go-to for pleasure, but movies and photography are.
Nice. So here's my last question. You are always texting me a song saying, you should sing this, or this is a song for what just happened, or, you know, you seem to look at the world through song, which is wonderful, because as a musician, songwriter, I love that people really appreciate stories and songs in that way. So I'm curious, what song would you choose for this experience today? For sitting here, talking, sharing, being in this bubble of truth, this bubble of honesty. What is there a song that comes to mind?
Yes.
Oh, wow. See what I mean?
And this was impromptu, so I'm really, really pleased here. There's an incredible song that I heard at a spiritual center that I go to here. And it's,
in Los Angeles.
Angeles. And his name is Jason Mays, I believe, out of San Diego, California. And it's called Life is Wonderful. And it's something like, la, 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 la. Life is wonderful, la, 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 la. I cannot believe I'm singing right now, but it's just this extraordinary piece of music that he created the way that I take my pictures.
Wow. Oh, wow.
And it's an extraordinary song that I want you to sing to me sometime.
Okay. Okay. All right. You're on.
And then my partner could harmonize with you.
I love it. Yeah. Well, there's just a couple of minutes left, and I just want to say, go on record, since that's what we're doing here, that I think you're an extraordinary woman, and when I enjoy you as a friend, I enjoy your company and palling around with you, and then when I step back and see the impact you're having on the world through your teaching and through your global outreach, I'm getting chills. I just feel so I'm proud of you, and I love how you're contributing to this life and that you're doing so much. You're doing, when I watch you, I feel like I'm watching someone do everything they can. They're leaving it all on the table, as it says, or putting it all on the line, and I see you do that all the time. So I'm very proud to know you and grateful to be here. Friend, and I've enjoyed this. And we have 2 minutes left, and if there's something you would like to say to wrap up.
There is. I'd like to say, please, everybody, register to vote before the November midterm election. I'm begging people to do that, please. And I thank you for interviewing me. This was meant to be. I wanted you to interview me. I wanted to be a part of StoryCorps. It's just an amazing opportunity that happened today. And I hope that we get to share a beer in about 10 minutes somewhere here in Los Angeles. But thank you so much. It means the world to me that you interviewed me today.
Oh, back at you, kiddo. It's really nice.